Hello, welcome to Base Camp for Men. I'm your host, Tony Rizak. This is a show that gives you insights and resources in how to live a more courageous life. We look to assist you on your hero's journey in any way that we can. Truth is our compass, humanity, our tribe. Welcome and let's get started. Hello, Base Campers. I hope you're all doing well. Every once in a while, I come across a guest with very similar interests as myself. I'm not talking about sports or Bitcoin or dismantling the deep state, all things I'm obviously very fascinated with. No, the interest I'm talking about is my long-term fascination and study of myth, archetypes, and the hero's journey. These tools have taught me so much in such a short period of time. That is, if you consider 20 or 25 years to be a short period of time. In many ways, these things have made me who I am today. When you work with archetypes and myths, something seems to awaken in your soul, a remembrance perhaps, and a wisdom can emerge that my life belongs to something deeper and bigger than just myself and my little ego. There is a very noticeable and powerful impact that living this way has on oneself and those around you. You no longer live this life with so much struggle and angst. Quite the contrary. There's a lightness that emerges that comes from right-sizing the ego. The divine light, Christ, God, Goddess, however you conceive the inner divinity, can shine through and speak through you. The seeker of the grail becomes a resonance for others to also seek the soul within. And the more you do this, the more you trust it. I've seen it 1,000 times, both in myself and those around me. Something is emerging in humanity right now. We seem to be in the midst of reclaiming something that most people aren't even aware that we had lost. It is the most fascinating time to be alive. I'm always grateful to speak with a fellow traveler, a woman who has done the work to understand both her own hero's journey, but also helps others make sense of their life chapters using these same powerful tools and lenses. Enjoy the interview. Today's episode is brought to you by Stand Up Now Apparel. Stand Up Now has amazing designs centered on God, family, freedom, and patriotism. They use only the softest cotton in their designs and have gear for the whole family. There's something for everyone, Base Campers. I know you're going to love their products. Go support them at www.standupnowapparel.com and use the code BASECAMP to receive a 10% discount and free shipping. And now, on to our interview. My guest today is Beth Martins. Beth is a mystic and teacher, a musician, an author, and a podcaster. She's also a woman with a deep knowledge of archetypes and the hero's journey. Here is my interview with Beth Martins. Okay, I am here with Beth Martins, musician and mystic teacher, Beth Martins. Beth, welcome to Base Camp for Men. It is great to have you on the show.
It's great to be here. Thank you so much for asking me.
Yeah, I saw your stuff and I was like, wow, this is like my female doppelganger. Not that we look alike, but that we have these kind of similar interests in archetypes and the hero's journey. And I was just, your story is really compelling. And so thankfully you were game for having a conversation. You also have a podcast. And before we get into all the juicy stuff, I guess just give us a little bit of a background of, you know, kind of where you grew up and where you live now and what you do for work and anything else you'd like the listeners to know about.
Sure thing. So I'm here in the prairies in Winnipeg, Manitoba. It's really freaking cold right now. We're in the deep freeze. And I tried to move away from here many times, and my life kept bringing me back over and over and over again. So there was something that this land had yet to teach me, or still possibly has yet to teach me. And I was born and raised in a family business. I was, by the age of 10 years old, I was working, I was making money, I was learning this world of business that my parents had taken the risk to go off on their own and do. And I ended up doing a degree in anthropology, which is where I started to connect with archetypes, just in an academic way. And when I was done that degree, I realized I was qualified for absolutely nothing. And in the meantime, I had created a fascination for going to India and studying with a guru on the mountain and all of the mantras and the Sanskrit and the archetypes in the gods and the goddesses. So I just wanted to do that. That was my goal, was to go and just be on that mountain. And I thought that I had to go and, in reality, I needed to establish myself somehow, to make a living, to be independent. And so I went to work with my family's firm. Long story short is within about going on a decade, I was diagnosed with a stage 4 lymphoma, which taught me what I already knew, that I was a fish out of water in that world. I loved my family. I liked the work. Actually, I like it. I enjoy, I've got an inner business nerd going on, but the corporate world was so evil and cold and hard, and it was always faceless where these demands were coming from. It really wasn't a person behind it. It was some machine. Mm-hmm. And so I invented getting really sick in order to get out of that, and was able to. On the other side of it, took me 3 years against the odds. I was told I wasn't going to survive. I had two separate diagnoses. In the very end, I was told without a stem cell transplant, I was going to die. And so it wasn't looking good. And that's, in fact, what pushed me into the world of archetypes. I didn't even know. I didn't choose that. I didn't think, oh, I need archetypes or anything, archetype work. But serendipitously, Carolyn Miss published that year that I was on what I thought was my deathbed. And it was The Sacred Contracts. Are you familiar with that book,
Tony? Yes, I am. Yeah, right, interesting. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, so I used that book to save my life. I went in and found what I couldn't see about myself, and was able to go from being a dying person to being a living person nearly overnight because of the revelation that I had and the energy that returned to my system over it.
Wow, that is great. I mean, I'm curious, did you, when you got diagnosed, did you lean on traditional like allopathic medicine, or did you immediately, because you were kind of, you know, esoteric in your interest with Indian stuff, did you go the more naturopathic way when you were diagnosed, or how did you navigate that? I'm really curious, because I know some people that have done both. It sounds like you're attributing your big healing to the work in Sacred Contracts, but I'm wondering about the medicine part. Like, did you do the whole chemo and all that, or did your soul sort of say, no, don't do that, that's not the way to go for you?
My soul said, don't do that. So I tried every way possible not to do that. Mm-hmm. And as you might know, what you resist persists. And so my great fear of allopathic medicine that I had, I would literally shake at the door of the hospital when I had to go there, plus all kinds of traumas that happened in there that added to that. But yeah, I tried to avoid it like the plague, and spent countless dollars and lost my home over it, just trying to get a natural cure. There was a little bit of progress along those lines, but next thing you know, I started to go downhill, and it was my naturopath that sent me home to do what he thought to be radiation. It turned out I didn't qualify for that. So yeah, I went through chemotherapy for 11 months the first time. Mm-hmm. And after the second diagnosis, I was back for daily chemotherapy. I had no resistance at that point. And that was like both good and bad, because it was a grand poisoning. Mm-hmm. And having got, so, you know, the first time it wasn't that scary, because I had a cancer they said wasn't terminal. It wasn't, you know, many people survived it. There was some 80% survival rate. But once you have the second diagnosis, then they consider you have no survival rate, that 100% of those people died. This is all stats that don't apply in real life, but that was their experience and their programming that they put on me. So yeah, I went headlong into that. But I became very adept at looking for all of the underlying causes, not just wrestling with the flesh and the disease of it, but seeing, okay, what in me is cooperating with death right now? Mm-hmm. And I was able to find that exact thing. And instead of run from death, to actually allow it to come into my awareness. And I was reading, I think it was the Dalai Lama at the time. Mm-hmm. And he said that until you have learned to die, you can't live. Mm. Something along those lines. Mm-hmm. So I got really brave. It's you know, a lot of people don't want to touch that with a 10-foot pole. It's how I went through most of those years, is rising above it and doing my mantra, I'm immortal, I'm blissful, and you know, trying to not feel the death programming. So this was a very big U-turn that showed me how much I had invested myself and my energy in that death programming, and then was able to start turning it around by going into it rather than running away from it.
Wow, what a great story, man. I am just blown away by how courageously and how skillfully and with soul and spirit that you navigated that, because that is one that with that kind of diagnosis, a lot of people would forsake some of their deeper teachings that maybe they've understood about the soul being immortal, and they would start white knuckling the ego, mind, and the body, you know. And I can't say that I wouldn't go that way, you know what I mean? Like, I've not been tested quite the way you have. So man, that is so amazing. I wanted to ask you, like, what was, you said you were influenced in academia by archetypes or the hero's journey. What, like, give us a little bit of sense of like what first drew you to it. Like, what was the attractor? Was it Joseph Campbell? Was that one that got you kind of going? Or, you know, what did you find that was initially interesting, and kind of what did you learn about yourself and maybe the tribe, the human tribe, by your those first kind of steps into studying it?
Great question. I was on a search, because I was doing anthropology cross-cultural studies as a way to find what was common in humanity, what persisted throughout culture and throughout time. And that's exactly where archetypes pop up, because it doesn't matter where you come from or what language you speak or what era you were raised in. These consistencies are incredible, actually. And this has been one of the joys of working as a coach, which I do now. I didn't answer that question, helping people to deprogram and go on their hero's journey. And in that, in that place, I was able to just see from, you know, again, a more intellectual place, that humanity does have roots that are common. And then, you know, when I work with somebody in the US or Germany or France or wherever they come from, I was seeing how the archetypes would show up without fail, without any color of their unique experience. And so it taught me that these patterns exist. And in a world that is full of chaos, you complimented me for being so skillful and going through my journey. Well, this is, you're hearing this from a lot of years of synthesizing and finding the meaning and creating meaning also, because we are meaning creators. But, you know, for the most part, we experience our world as chaos, both inside ourselves and outside. Of course, outside, they capitalize on our internal chaos. And so it's like a mess. And then this gave me a little bit of the first look at how ordered actually everything is. And that there's great comfort in that all by itself. It's not chaos. It's not meaningless. It's not just a bunch of empty events in life that have no connection. And I learned how to thread backwards, because the purpose and the hero's journey can often be impossible to see when you're moving forward. You can be quite blind to it. But when you look back, everything weaves together. Why? You're one being and it's one life. So that's as deep as I went with it. And then I got, and you know, after my degree, I went off to India, like I said, and started to get in. I never really gave the archetypes as even a word much thought until much later, until I'm literally on my deathbed. And then it was a remembering of what I only looked at. But that common thread. We did look at Joseph Campbell. I, of course, knew him to be the maybe father of our concept of the hero's journey. And I took a new, just before I wrote my book on the archetypes of the hero's journey as I see them, I took another pass at Joseph Campbell's Hero with 1,000 Faces. And you know what? I couldn't even make it halfway through because of the gore.
Mm-hmm.
Because I finally saw all of these, especially male initiation rites, and kudos to you for focusing on this topic, how utterly cruel and damaging that that has been. It's easy to elevate all these rights and treat them like they're so great, but it's really just torture of the boy children. So I had to turn away and go on my own path.
Yeah, you know what's interesting about him is, you know, I got exposed to him like you at university, and I can't say that I've ever, you know, just been like, oh my God, I've got to read everything Joseph Campbell's ever written. I mean, I think his brilliance was in showing the monomyth of the hero's journey in every culture, in every age. And that was something that I was like, huh, you know, and he was so well-versed in every culture that he, you know, on a whim could share with you 20 different examples of it quite easily, and probably 20 more after that, from everything I understood about him. But what stuck with me over the years was this notion that, and I wanted to ask you about this, in that I find that it plugged me in, the archetypes and specifically the hero's journey plugged me into humanity in a way that I was not able to access prior to my understanding of it. In other words, I saw that my life wasn't just about this little ego trying to be, you know, trying to make my money and make an impact, or, you know, whatever, you know, the young ego driven person wants to do, that my life sort of belonged to the tribe. And when I say about the tribe, I mean all of humanity, including my ancestors, including all the people that came before me, and then generations ahead are impacted by my hero's journey, or my lack thereof taking a heroic journey. And so that freed me to sort of make more courageous choices at every point, because it wasn't really about me being this kind of Superman. It was about me honoring all of humans, all the whole human tribe that has been so courageous in so many ways, and that I could be like a proud member of that tribe. But I find when I talk about, and I've led workshops, I've led men's groups and all these different things, I find like a lot of people bristle at thinking of themselves as heroic, that they think, well, I'm just trying to do a little better. I'm not really a hero. And then when you start to get into their story of their life, they like uncover all these unbelievably heroic things they've done. Like, you know, my dad left when I was little, and I had to help my mom raise my three brothers. And then, you know, I became an alcoholic and I had to kick booze. And, you know, they start telling me all these things. I'm like, I'm hearing an unbelievable hero at every step of the way. You've just told me four great hero's tales about your own journey, and you're only 37 years old. And so I think that if there's one thing that I love to emphasize on, and I'm interested in getting your thoughts, do people kind of pump the brakes of, no, I'm not really taking a hero's journey, and my life's not heroic? But I'm just interested in getting your thoughts on that. Do you find that people resist thinking of themselves as heroic because they think it's braggadocio, or they think, oh, I don't want to be somebody that big and special?
Right. Yeah, they don't want to see themselves as heroes, partly also because, in addition to what you're saying, is that someone has always been positioned as our hero. Right. That's how they do it. And and so, you know, whether it's the doctor or the politician or the technician, whomever is going to swoop in the products, they're always positioned as the hero. It's going to save you from, you know, stupid things like acne, or maybe worse, the drug is the hero. There's always going to be some outside force that's going to come and save you. Mm-hmm. So much of, say, Christianity has been criticized for that Jesus is there and he's saving you from everything, and you don't have to do anything, and your sins are forgiven, so you don't need to actually right your ways, or you know how that can be used. So yes, there's resistance to being seen as the hero. People aren't used to identifying with archetypes. Now, you know, it's not that, like you said, you're not wanting to put a cape on and call yourself Superman now, but to give yourself credit for the trials and tribulations that you have allowed yourself to take on and to overcome, as opposed to just running from all the trials and tribulations that don't let you run away for very long. They mm-hmm. are going to get your attention one way or another. Like me with a stage 4 lymphoma, I wasn't willing to go on the journey. I just wanted to go along, get along. I thought my whole India trip was the ultimate path to enlightenment. I wasn't thinking along the lines of heroism in any way.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, just being alive, you know, you can get really micro about this. Getting out of bed every day in this world is a heroic effort
mm-hmm.
to be able to turn and face. And then, you know, we have indoctrination, we have programming. This is a huge part of my work, to see how do the archetypes get, how do the shadows in particular of the archetypes get anchored in programming mm-hmm. that can make the patterns really difficult to even interrupt, never mind change and finish with. So, you know, one of the big programs is that I'm not good enough.
Yep.
And it has a whole spectrum of expressions. We're usually familiar with that one, but we don't know the side of the program that says, I'm good enough.
Mm-hmm.
And so it capitalizes on both sides, with the people that will fall to the low energy of not good enough, and people that will fall for the high energy of good enough. So the hero's journey kind of levels the playing field. It was actually one of the things that I loved about studying with a bunch of women entrepreneurs at one time. They weren't really my tribe at all, but I knew that I needed to up-level myself. I just had a baby. It was time to get more serious than just go to teach $20 classes every night. And those women showed me a level of authenticity, because they put themselves in the battlefield, so to speak. And it didn't matter how much ego you had in that battlefield. That wasn't going to save the day or cause them to come out ahead or reach their goals or anything. So they were some of the most humble, egoless people, even if they were flashy and dressing for the money mm-hmm. or something like that. But it stripped them of the ego that the hero's journey does.
Yep.
It's baggage. It's too heavy. You can't really take it. You can't really get anywhere if you don't continuously allow that part of yourself to, we'll say, die, since you're familiar with the whole, it seems like the most of the hero's journey is about dying.
Yep.
And, facing rather than running away. We are identification making machines, and we can place ourselves in anything, good and bad, and it's still a mistaken identity. It's still going to be a disturbance and a loss of energy. I know it's pretty esoteric now. We're off a little bit off in the abstract, but
it's good. I like it. Yeah.
Right on. Yeah. So then, to me, the hero's journey is something that very poignant. Are you accepting the call? Or are you refusing the call? That's in the child archetype, and all of the stages that will challenge different parts of ourselves, bring up different parts of ourselves that need to be looked at, whether the work is inside or outside or both. I looked, my book focused a lot on the differences in how women and men go through their archetypes, mm-hmm. same archetypes, identical signature vibration of the energies of it, but navigating from their own perspective in different ways. And so
you had brought up shadow. I think that's really interesting, because I don't think in the West, certainly not in you know, America and Canada, I'll speak as an American, you know, we're not taught, in fact, we're cultured away from the hero's journey. And what I mean by that is we're really taught to avoid the shadow, the things that we, you know, hide, repress, deny, the things that we don't want to talk about. The parts of our wounds and our personalities that are begging to be healed and paid attention to, we're taught to like put on a, you know, confident face. And to, you know, you had mentioned authenticity. I think that's why people that do say yes to their calling and used to their hero's journey are so attractive to talk to, work with, because there's something about facing the shadow, facing, you face death, right? Sometimes it feels like a death when you have an ego death, when you're like, I'm not the hotshot lawyer anymore. I'm sick, or, you know, my wife just left me and I can't project this, I've got everything handled thing that I've been trying to do. And it becomes this call to tell the truth on a soul level about what's really going on. And I just find like it's a brilliant medicine for the men and women of the West, because we're not taught that. It's like, don't talk about the stuff that makes you uncomfortable. It seems to be the subtext, at least it was when I was growing up. And I had to find my way into shadow work. But what I found was that this is freeing me from all the stuff that was weighing me down and getting in my way. And I was just doing so much self-sabotaging. So I don't know. I was just kind of offering that up, that we're not trained really to take a look at the shadow and to take the hero's journey.
Exactly. Yeah, we are in fact trained to turn the other direction, to suck it up, buttercup, or whatever kind of thing. Rise above it. Yeah. Take the high road. There's all kinds of ways. That is in fact how I almost died, by getting up and out of my experience, thinking that was bliss or enlightenment, but it was really denial and dissociation from the body. And so by turning that around and starting to go into those, that call to tell the truth. Now, I already had a lifetime of being a truth teller and all the consequences of that, because living in a world, right, that nobody wants to. People would feel upset just because I walk in the room. Oh no, Beth is here.
Yep.
And that's the lover archetype in my system, by the way, that loves the truth more than they are afraid to be seen for that, or, you know, whatever, if there's consequences. But yes, completely. So the shadow, it's not just because of indoctrination and our teaching, but it is formidable. When you meet part of yourself that you didn't see before, maybe you saw the results of it playing out in your life in circumstances you don't like, relationships, your health, your work not satisfying you, whatever it is. And so by the time it is expressed out in the world, you know that shadow has been trying to get your attention all along, right? I didn't need to get a stage 4 lymphoma. That was extremely advanced, having ignored a great deal of that shadow pain that I was experiencing. So instead of going into it and letting it teach me, I suppressed it. I would run away from it. I'd do everything at all cost. Even a lot of the healing journey was that, you know, fighting against cancer and all of that until I really changed my paradigm. Now I know that cancer was so working for me. And frankly, I would do things so, so differently now based on what I know. And it might not have taken me 3 years to get to the other side. But yeah, this is always the formidable thing. Now I've been doing this work for better, like going on 25 years, and I will still be completely floored by unearthing something inside of myself. It happened just this week where I got myself out of my comfort zone to do something, to help my son with something. And it was like somebody was trying to kill me. I had touched a hot stove and I needed to just run away. And so it keeps you in that place of humility, which again, the journey is so, you know, it's going to humble you. It's just part of it. And it keeps me on a level field with the people that I work with. So I never feel like I'm so far ahead of them. What's wrong with them? Why can't they just, it's always a revelation when you see something, it's always a surprise. I, sometimes will, I'll joke with myself, but sometimes even kick myself. So I'm in the process of training coaches. The pandemic was what inspired me to create a coaching training where I teach people how to read archetypes and how to help people to deprogram using these tools that are, to me, the fastest that I've ever come across. And so I'm always right in the soup with them, and it gives me a sense of compassion for them and never a separateness, but that we're all in this together. That's part of the hero's journey. You meet a lot of characters. It takes a whole village to raise a person on the hero's journey.
Yeah.
And then those, you know, it does get more normal. I'm in this community. So if somebody says like, oh, I woke up and I felt like killing my husband, nobody's going to go, oh, like, oh, right. You terrible person. It's like, oh, you're running some kill energy, the kill programming going on there. And so it becomes more normalized. We don't have to hide. That's the problem, that when we hide our authentic self from other people, we have to hide it from ourselves at the same time. So that's been a very big luxury for me, to have created my own community where a lot of this stuff is normal, but it still is formidable.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm glad you brought up that the soul never stops learning. I think there's a tendency, and that the path brings about humility for a whole bunch of different reasons, and the humility is part of how you can bring medicine back to the tribe. Because if you're holier than thou and I'm just better than you, and I've realized so many more things than you, who wants to learn from that person, right? Like, I don't. And I don't want to be that person. I would much rather be humble servant to humanity and what's going on. And you can only speak to people when you come from there, because then they can hear you when you're honest about your own wounds and your own hero's journey, where you've had the dark night of the soul and what that looked like and how scared you were of this and when you lost, you know, whatever you lost, your fortune, your business, your spouse, whatever the case may be. That's what people resonate with, and that's what has them lean in my experience, and I'm happy to provide that. But you're right, it requires humility in its expression. That's how it translates to more people. I wanted to shift it just a little bit. You know, my listeners know, because I did a whole bunch of early episodes on men's work and male initiation and male archetypes, and talked a lot in the early days, and I still do really, about the hero's journey. And in men's work, we sort of, for whatever reason, the mythopoetic men's movement and its big training that it has done all over the world is the Mankind Project's New Warrior Training, and they used five real archetypes to create processes that men would go through and access. So that was what we did, and the male archetypes were warrior, king, lover, and magician, and the whole thing was a hero's journey on their training. So you could say they use five: hero, warrior, lover, magician, and king. And I just wanted to ask you, do you work with those archetypes? Are those, because I can tell you, I know some are completely, in fact, all of them are completely available to all of humanity, but is it different as a woman teaching the archetype of work? Do you use those five? Do you use, I know there's other teachers that use, you know, I can't remember her name off the top of my head, but, you know, she has some books in there, she's got like maybe, it's Carol something, she wrote The Hero Within. I had her on the show. I'm blanking out right now. But she uses like 14 different archetypes, including ones that I didn't really know about. And I've kind of stayed in my lane because the five ones that I have mentioned are the ones that I understand the best. It's the ones that have taught me the most. And maybe I just didn't want to complicate it by keeping adding archetypes. I thought, you know, four or five was plenty for me. But I guess I wanted to get your thoughts on which ones you work with, which ones do you work with more than that or less or different ones?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I came at it from within, speaking of The Hero Within. I believe we're talking about a book that did influence me along the way. I can't remember her. Was it Pearson or something? I can't remember her.
Carol Pearson, that's it.
Is it? Okay,
yep,
okay, cool.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, And so how I came to the archetypes was through my own inner direct experience and more so on the heels of my father's death. So losing that masculine, which is one of the, you know, the loss of parents is the most transforming. I hear anyway, I haven't lost a child or anything else, but I have lost both my parents. So on the heels of my dad's death, I went through a great deal of healing, of course. I had been training as in the deprogramming work, which was very lucky, and I was surrounded by a community that could help me through that death. And then on the other side, I felt after he passed to be a very blank slate. And while it was a beautiful blank slate, I appreciated it very much compared to all of the pain that I had been through, I was left not knowing how to be in the world anymore. Mm. I could no longer relate to the expression that I had, and I had no new expression. And so I was like, okay, God, what next? And I would go into vigil every single night on this prayer. Okay, what, how am I going to be? What form is this going to take? And I, you know, I'm a mom. I've got, the business has got to go forward somehow in the world, and I'm not getting a job. I already decided that a really long time ago. Mm-hmm. So in the prayers, I started to attract. Now this is a little bit convoluted. I'll try not to go into too much, but I was attracting probably entities that I interpreted to be archetypes. And it took me a long time to figure out what it was, all these experiences, but finally I could name it as the mermaid as an archetype. Mm-hmm. This one I had never thought of my whole entire life. I wasn't a little girl who fantasized about mermaids. I never saw the movies. I never read anything about them. It just wasn't me. But here was this mermaid energy. And so I began to break it down and see, okay, what are the components? What is this made of? Because there are complex archetypes that make up yourself and myself and any figure in history, or even a very well-written book, and the characters in there will be a complex cluster of archetypes. And so I started to break down this energy, and I found 8 primary archetypes in it. And that is the child and the rebel and the warrior, the nurturer, the lover, the hedonist, and the alchemist.
Mm.
And so these are, there is some overlap here in this, in the words that you're using, but the little bit that I looked into the lover, the warrior, magician, and the, however that title goes, mm-hmm. I couldn't relate to it. After having my own revelations, I went out and I started to research a little bit and see what compares to what. And I saw so many different arrangements of archetypal philosophy and practice and all of that kind of thing, mm-hmm. that I thought, you know what? I'm going to give myself permission to do this from the inside out and not refer to any body of work and not apologize that I'm, you know, it turns out that most of the Jungians out there, they really don't like me. For whatever reason, I've been hired and fired for talks. Like before the talk comes, they find out.
We're not bringing her in. She's going to disrupt the corporate culture.
Something like that. I did a talk. I couldn't, their heavy faces and the grimaces. Oh my God. I'm just like, oh, okay, fascinating. But I have an innocence about this because it's just coming to me. And then it's not just ideas and, oh, that sounds logical. It's the direct proof of it.
Yeah.
And then it was 2.5 years later when my mom passed away. So not long after this had happened. And I was working with this, what I describe now to be an archetype soup, these 8 archetypes. And I started to not only test them on myself, but also on other people and look at, you know, how I could help them to find in the shadows inside themselves so they could release and move forward in their lives. And then when my mom passed away, I came across Carol's book and I had read that. As I finished the book, I'm like, wait a minute. I wonder if my archetypes that I discovered inside are a journey.
Mm.
Right. Again, I hadn't really, we did a little bit of presenting on the hero's journey, but much more from an academic place, much less of a, you know, deep spiritual, practical place. And at that point, it literally took me 5 minutes to see how those archetypes are a meaningful journey that move easily and naturally between them. I've been able to demonstrate this time and time and time again. It's so much fun for me to see how there is a natural movement between the archetypes, and they, as if call on each other, they're calling you forward. They do represent a oneness of the whole thing, so that what I notice is people don't have 3 years to lay down like I did. They don't have all the time in the world to go in and explore. Because one of my findings in that is that the inner world is complex beyond imagination. And it can be overwhelming for people. They don't know where to begin. They don't know where to start. They've just got some problem they want to solve. And then they've got this wall of archetypal energy inside themselves. And so the eight archetypes became a gross oversimplification. Mm-hmm. And necessarily so that it could give you a place to begin working. You know, it took me the better part of 3 months daily working, practically going into a coma every single day, but driven by this death sentence I had been given. And then the archetype energy started to resolve, and I was able to see in Technicolor, which was miraculous. I couldn't even believe I couldn't see it. There it was, it plain as day. And so now I'm always in the business, you could say, or the work that I give myself is to create points of entry for people. And that's not me to enter them, it's them to enter their own unconscious so that they can find places, right? I just worked on one archetype and I was able to save my life because I found such a huge pocket of suppressed energy. Mm-hmm. And so that doesn't, you don't need to take on the whole of the world. You can just work with what's in front of you, what comes up in you. The imagination is a beautiful tool. It's always going to serve you what needs to be released next.
I love how you created that. It's brilliant that you created it from the inside out, showing that really archetypes belong to everyone and that we all have access, that you didn't have to read it in a book or do a training where somebody presented you with archetypes, that it came from within. I love the story about the mermaid, because that's a brilliant pickup from the divine. Because had you been a girl that was obsessed with mermaids when you were a little kid, you would have thrown it aside, going, "Oh, I'm just having the mermaid dream again. I'm not going to pay attention." But the fact that you never were into that, it was noteworthy to your inner seeing, because you're like, "Wait a minute, where's this coming from? Let me investigate this." And as you were talking about the archetypes, I'm like, you know, I haven't worked with some of those that you had mentioned, and it's funny because I have a strong rebel energy. In fact, I'm wearing a t-shirt right now that says Rebel Scum from Star Wars, and I identify with that archetype and the alchemist archetype as well, which kind of in my, you know, in the ones we've worked at, that would fall probably under magician. But still, it's very distinct, and a lot of what you were talking about, it's fantastic, and it's really your own, because it was your own creation with the divine, with the archetypes, to set a constellation that was really like, no, these are the archetypes that I'm meant to work with. It's just really brilliant. Like, good for you for doing that. I don't know if I've heard of anybody else quite doing it that way. A lot of it comes from Joseph Campbell or Jungian psychology. And so they use kind of the tried and true archetypes. And that was one where you let it come to you in a good way, I'll say. And I just before we finish up, I wanted to ask, you've got a great saying on your website, and I wanted to get your comments on it. It says, quote, "The thing you're here on earth to do is never going to leave you alone," unquote. I love this quote. I had a big smile when I read it, and I just wanted to give you, and then we'll give you a chance to talk about where people can find you and what you're up to with your coaching and stuff. But yeah, how did you come across that, and what does it represent for you?
from, again, the direct experience, and thank you for all of those kudos there. So I had very severe insomnia, and a big part of that was that I wasn't, although that expressed in different ways over time, so it's not just that, but that even when I was back in the corporate world and, you know, I needed to get out, and it wasn't going to leave me alone,
mm-hmm.
right? I could have stayed loyal to my family and stayed loyal to the expectations more of society and the requirement for making money and being successful and all of that kind of thing, but it wouldn't leave me alone. And then the years of insomnia also pushing up, it would make me get up in the middle of the night to write something or do something, or, you know, it was just always creating an urgency under my butt, like a fire.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't until I was able to turn around, a lot of turnarounds in my life, and start cooperating with that energy and satisfying that energy that was hungry. And, you know, I talk about the difference between desire that is a loss of energy, a drain and a lack of energy, and then the desire that comes right from the soul. Mm-hmm. And the only difference between the two is you can let go of all of the other desires.
Mm.
But as soon as you try to release the desire that comes from the soul, it gets stronger.
Yep.
It comes at you even more. So it is something, this is the foundation for sacred purpose. This is the hero's journey. To me, the purpose and meaning and freedom are all identical.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so by creating a lot of, it was actually chaos and lots of new activity and work and problems and complications, but because they were all in this context of being purposeful and meaningful for me, it was all fulfilling, mm-hmm. not draining, even though at times very difficult, but it was always on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is, to me, the, you know, if people want to use me for that reason, to find out the purpose, to also very much demystify purpose, because we it's a noun, we treat it as a thing, that we don't have it, we need to find it, and we need to connect with it, and then when you know it, you're going to know everything. It's really not like that at all. Mm-hmm. So I do have a course where I teach this exclusively. I was shocked when I put out a little note to my list at one point. I said, does anyone want to learn their sacred purpose? Because by that point, I took it for granted that everybody had this awareness that came to me through having been as sick as I was and healing. And then there was this huge interest. I'm like, oh, okay, people are really wanting this. And so it's taken me some years, but I refined my process to be able to teach how not to add sacred purpose to your life, but to take away everything inside yourself that is not that.
Mm-hmm.
Like finding the sculpture in the wood. We all have it. It's not a creation. You're not going to be the only one that didn't come with purpose. It is how we fit with humanity, mm-hmm. how we have a graceful giving and receiving that is natural and life-giving. And so, yes, I think every person is destined for that. Some people are more remote to it and can still go along to get along. But then there are the people that say, I can't go any further. This mm-hmm. is it. If it costs me my marriage, or it costs me some financial hardship, I just spoke with someone on a call today that was in that exact place, committed to their journey rather than committed to all of those normal things in life that at the end, they're good, but they don't satisfy.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Beth, thanks so much for coming on. Where can people find you? Where you and your work? How can they work with you? You know, I don't know if people work with you if they get diagnosed with cancer, but I would, if I knew anybody that got some sudden diagnosis, I would want to put them in touch with you so you could help guide them, because I think, you know, you had mentioned that, I mean, you got these terrific results and said, I would do things a lot differently had I done it again. So I don't know if people reach out to you for that reason, but you're like pretty much top of the list right now on that, you know, teaching, because I think you've been through it and you have a really interesting perspective, and you plus you got great results out of it, you know, and you got healthy and you learned a whole lot.
Yeah, I have never put the shingle out for a few different reasons around helping people with cancer, but it does happen every so often that people choose me as someone mm-hmm. to work with. I did. One of my mentors came to me on what he was told was his deathbed, and he heard I had survived cancer, so he hired me on the spot. We did a very intensive training. He messaged me down the line. He said, "Beth, you saved my life. I'd like to turn around and help you." He was actually the reason that I ended up writing my book at the time that I did. Mm-hmm. He did die 2 years later. He passed away, and there was other reasons for that. Mm-hmm. I hesitate because had I helped somebody with this last year, now I would have to take back everything where health is concerned.
Yeah,
and so I'm more in the role of let's get to the root of mm-hmm. where you're getting stuck. Let's see. Yes, maybe there's a health challenge, but let's see how that shows up as a pattern in every area of your life so that you can simplify it. And so that's what I do on a regular daily basis, coaching individuals, also training coaches, because when the pandemic hit, I thought, okay, God, how could I serve now that will allow me to move forward and allow me to help people where they're at this time? And that's been amazing to unpack the process. Sometimes you just work your magic and you think it's all intuitive and there's no system or anything like that. So this has been a wonderful learning for me. The next training comes up in September. It's not too late to talk to me about it. We're in fact just opening. So you can find all of that information at my website, bethmartins.com. I also am the founder of the House of Free Will, which is a private association that meets on a regular basis to create a community and be together with like-minded souls to explore very deep topics. I do most of my content in the private now. So I do a weekly video for them and lead discussions. And we have a meeting every Sunday for the purpose of talking about the truth and nothing else. A good experiment for being in the private, although it's not, that's a whole other discussion around the legal mm-hmm. side of that. That's so much psyop and crap going on.
Yep.
The easiest way to start with my work would be to do the quiz on my homepage, the King Hero Archetype Quiz. In 10 minutes, you can find out where on the path of purpose you are, not what your archetype is forever, but where you're focusing more of your attention and energy, and where if you were to do the inner work, you would get most benefit at this time. So that's a really good way to get a little taste of it. There's videos on the other side explaining how the gifts and the shadows of the archetypes show up and the order that they do. I just also created a service that I haven't done very much of, but I got inspired to create Hero's Journey Archetype Readings, so that someone could come and see the whole context of where they're personally at, just like an astrology reading or other kind of readings. But for me, this is not a, I'm not a psychic, I'm not a medium, I don't read that way. I'm just reading patterns that normally people don't see about themselves. They can even be telling it to me and they still don't see it. Mm-hmm. So to be there as a mirror and help them to make sense and go right to work on it if they can, meaning, what is the held energy that is causing you to act inauthentically or outside of the alignment, like I was back in more than 25 or going on 25 years ago, where I was willing to sacrifice my life for these inner lies that I was living, and where people don't have to get so far out of alignment that it's so unmanageable. They can work at it when it's small and not threatening their life or anything like that. I mentioned also the course about Find Your Sacred Purpose is an excellent place to begin and get a handle on the tools of deprogramming and working through. I say work through, but really just to see what you don't see and make new decisions about it. So I think there's lots there. There's a whole lot there. There's the King Hero's Journey podcast, which people can go and watch the interviews with that I like to host you on, for example. There's a lot of material there that is useful. It's one of my all-time favorite things to do is interviewing people. It's so graceful and I learn a lot. That's how I learn. I just try to get that person and interview them. And I think that's There's more, but I could go on and on.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Beth, for coming on and taking time. We really appreciate, just love everything that you had to say today. And just thank you for sharing your insight and your wisdom with Basecamp for Men. Just really love it. And keep in touch. I'd love to come on your show if given the opportunity. And yeah, let's just keep track of one another. And just thank you today.
Thank you so much for hosting me. It's been a pleasure. And I'm really glad that you're doing the work that you do. It's very, very needed. We didn't even get into that topic.
Yeah. That's for your show.
All right. Perfect.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that conversation as much as I did. I have the privilege coming up to be a guest on Beth's podcast, which is called the King Hero's Journey podcast. That's something that's just perfect for the two of us. We'll have lots to talk about, and I will share details as we get a little closer. Thank you, base campers, and we'll see you around the fire next week. If you find value in our show and wish to show us some love, we are now making that very easy to do. You simply go to www.basecampformen.com and click on Donate Support Basecamp. You'll find an easy way to make either monthly donations for as little as $5 a month, or you can donate just once. We love the monthly donation and hope to build this up over the coming months, but any show of support is greatly appreciated, honestly. Thank you for your support and for helping to keep Basecamp as a resource on your hero's journey. That's our show for today. Thank you for listening. Men, good luck in all your endeavors and good luck on your hero's journey. This is Tony Rezac, and you're listening to Basecamp for Men.